Screeching.
I don't screech.
Like a haunt owl.
I...
Nona suddenly realized that whether she screeched or not wasn't the important thing here. She lowered her voice, staring at Zol's dark eyes.
You don't know what you're talking about. You've seen nothing.
Zol shrugged. On the ice, we know the Klaulathu. We do not run from them, screaming devils, like you people huddling in the corridor. Nona restrained herself from pointing out that Zol had been huddling with them for at least the past 5 years.
Klaulathu!
Do you know how to get rid of them? Kiot rose along her spine.
I can only leave when you die.
Zol stood. It is possible, but hard. Better to live with them. They are of the missing. You understand this? Pieces of the missing that they abandoned before they crossed the path. She walked off, leaving Nona open-mouthed.
Looked as though you got more than 3 words out of the Argatha.
Darla sat down heavily beside Nona and started to heap her plate.
Well, I am her shield.
Nona reached for the food, too. She made it a point of honor to always eat more than Darla managed, and Darla had an appetite most bears would envy.
Path first today,
Darla grumbled. She took 3 smoked kippers.
Not too bad.
Nona took 4.
Well, you may be. For me, it's a choice between meditation until my brain runs out of my ears, or begging off to see if I can get past 4 steps on Blade Path.
Nona shoveled eggs and kept a diplomatic silence. Darla had the worst sense of balance of any novice at the convent. Path lessons for those with Quantal blood at least consisted of more than hunting for serenity, clarity, and patience. Nona had a much more interesting time under Sister Pan's close guidance, but every attempt to reach the path was a reminder of the day Hesse died. With the Shipheart gone, reaching the path, which had always been a trial, became a feat of near impossible difficulty. On the day Nona had fought Raymel, somehow the depth of her anger, or being thread-bound to Hesse, who was so close to the Shipheart, had let her run the path. In the years since, Nona had touched the path on just 12 occasions. Only in recent months had Nona regained the same level of competence without the Shipheart's presence as she had when it was kept at the convent.
Practice the patience trance, Nona advised. It'll make the lesson more bearable.
She crammed an overfull fork into her mouth. Darla grimaced.
I don't have the patience to learn the patience trance. It's a vicious circle.
She filled her mouth too, and they chomped at each other a while. Despite the gerent girl welcoming Nona to their first class together with a beating, they'd become firm friends. Not that an outside observer would know it from the number of insults Darla threw Nona's way. Zol, Joelli, and Nona entered Path Tower by 3 different doors. Nona had found the east held a sense of rightness about it that the others lacked. Joelli came through the west in opposition. Zol came through the north, perhaps remembering her origins out on the ice. In the classroom at the top of the tower, they found themselves seats amid the play of light from the stained glass windows. The classroom was freezing as usual, and the novices' breath misted before them. The tower had been built without fireplaces, relying on the Shipheart warming the oil pipes that ran the length of the structure. Sigils on the pipes closest to the Shipheart had converted its power into heat. Many of the convent's buildings had been adapted since the loss, and the wind now stripped the smoke from 10 chimneys. But Sister Pan had resisted change.
Welcome, Mystic Class girls. Welcome.
The ancient woman sat on her treasure chest, wrapped in a fox fur robe, for which the abbess had sought special dispensation from the high priest on account of Sister Pan being close on 100 with nobody left alive who could say whether each year was now taking her closer to that century mark or further past it.
Zul and Nona have joined us. It's a rare class that boasts 3 Quantals.
2 days earlier, Joelle had been the only Quantal in the class, and the sole recipient of Sister Pan's attentions. Joelle scowled and wrapped the illegal shawl tighter around the faked bruising on her neck. She didn't look well pleased at having to share.
Clarity today, girls.
Sister Pan rubbed her hand over her stump and huddled deeper into her furs.
I've put the etching of the Halothian labyrinth against the wall.
She nodded for Darla to uncover it.
There is a second path from door to tomb. First find your clarity, then find that route. Eyes only.
She glanced at Darla as she sat down. The gerund had been known to leave her chair and try tracing paths with her finger.
Zoe, Nona, and Joelle will accompany me.
The 3 novices fell in behind Mistress Path. At least the practice rooms were warmer, lacking windows, and if they were lucky, Sister Pan would let them use any path energy they managed to channel to heat the room first before trying anything more complex. Nona allowed her vision to defocus and summoned the path's image out of the blurred confusion. She let the flickers of light from Pan's lantern fuse into a single burning line and followed it, her feet somehow losing contact with the reality of stone steps.
Follow close.
Sister Pan's voice, disembodied in a space both vast beyond measure and small beyond imagining.
A different room today.
Nona stumbled out of the void into a narrow curving chamber, very similar to the one in which she had practiced her pathwork for the years since her gift showed. It stood between the spiral of the central stair and the circle of the tower's outer wall, occupying another third of the space. The only difference lay in the nature of the sigils inlaid in silver upon the ceiling, floor, and every wall. These ones were smaller, more complex, less tightly bound. In places, loops and trails from one overwrote the next, and no two looked the same.
The thread room.
She hadn't meant to speak. Hesse had told her about the chamber.
It's time you and Zul got to grips with threadwork,
Sister Pan said.
Walking the path arms a mystic sister with forces that are very hard to use for anything but destruction. Here we focus on the more subtle path arts, but although they are gentle, one must never underestimate them. I believe our own dear Abbess has some hint of Quantal blood, and a rare unconscious talent for the most ephemeral threadwork. Done right, a gentle pull here, a touch there, a breath just sufficient to set a thread vibrating, and kings may be toppled, wars turned, the weak raised up.
She gave the lantern to Joelle, who moved to light 3 others.
Threadwork is a delicate art, which is why you two have never been any good at it. It rewards patience, observation, and empathy. There is no violence to it, though that does not preclude its use for malice. Hate can be a cold thing.
She pushed Nona aside and stood between her and Zol. Nona heard the creak of Pan's bones as she moved. When the nun stood hunched at her side, Nona realized with sudden surprise that she was taller than the old woman, and more solid. A single blow would shatter Sister Pan. A sense of unease came over Nona. It felt wrong somehow that so much knowledge and experience could be so fragile.
I will show you.
Sister Pan raised her hand and stared into the space beyond it. Nona waited, watching. When Nona had arrived at the convent, Sister Pan had loomed over her as all the other nuns did. There were still more secrets locked in her head than Nona could ever learn, the keys to powers untold. And yet, she looked so small, so frail, waiting to cross the path, so close, that the devils must be licking their lips.
She is old, but I would not dare her.
Nona looked again. Keot was never one to miss a chance to boast. It gave her comfort to know he feared Mistress Path.
Watch!
The air before Sister Pan, filled with the bright complexity of the path, a moving, living thing twisting through more dimensions than the eye could fathom.
When wool is spun on the wheel, a single length of yarn is wound around the spindle. But all around that strand of yarn there is a halo of loose pieces, fibers of wool not quite twisted in, wandering out from the main body.
As Sister Pan spoke, the path dimmed, and in the air all around it threads appeared, like stars when the sun has fled the sky.
The threads are not the path, but they are of the path. And because the path goes everywhere and runs through all things, so do the threads.
Nona wondered if Sister Pan had chosen to speak of yarn to explain the matter because she knew Nona was a peasant and might not understand a different analogy so well. She was still wondering about it when she became aware that her mouth was open. She closed her jaw with a snap and wiped her lips. The image Sister Pan had made was mesmerizing. With an effort, she tore her gaze from it.
It's fascinating, is it not?
Sister Pan's smile was a narrow white crescent in the darkness of her face.
I could watch it forever.
The slow motion of the threads reflected in Zol's and Joelle's eyes.
There's a danger there, Sister Pan said. The path will throw you sooner or later, but the threads will hold you. If you lack the will to free yourself, they will keep you until your years have run from you, and all that remains is to cross the path into darkness.
She waved at the pattern, and it faded, releasing the others. Joelle blinked and focused on Nona.
Mistress Path, you said that these two novices have no talent for thread work, because they're so predisposed to violence. But do you think they might just be violent because they know they lack the talent for deeper work?
A small smile played on her lips, as if the humiliation at the convent table had never happened. Sister Pan waggled her hand.
We shall see. Pathwork is closer to the brute force approach of the Red Sister, and threadwork more subtle. Like the arts of the Grey Sister, all stealth and guile. Mystic Sisters shade either towards the red or grey.
I would rather be open, straightforward, honest.
Nona wrinkled her nose.
Manipulating people, using them, feels wrong. It feels like lies. People should be allowed free will.
Sister Pan barked a laugh.
We're all puppets. Other people pull our strings every moment of every day. The only difference between us and Saya Ra dancing in the street show is that we can also pull our own strings of those of others. Threads aren't something external to the world that only a privileged few can touch. Every time you speak to someone, threads are pooled. Every glance exchanged, every punch thrown, every kindness shown. In thread work, we are just more direct about it, more focused.
She turned and fixed Nona with her dark eyes.
You need to know how to draw a thread, or how will you prevent your own from being drawn?
She reached forward, plucking at the air with finger and thumb.
At first it will help you to visualize the task. See it before you. Use your hands. It's nonsense, of course. Not needed. But the mind loves the familiar. There! She pinched and pulled. How do you feel, Nona?
Hungry.
Nona clapped both hands across her stomach.
Starved!
Basic needs, simple emotions are the easiest to influence.
Sister Pan opened her fingers as if releasing what she held.
And now?
Full of breakfast?
Nona laughed despite herself, then frowned.
But you couldn't do that with just words.
I couldn't?
Sister Pan tilted her head.
If I described a roast chicken in exquisite detail, steaming on a plate of buttered potatoes, its skin golden and crisp, seasoned with salt and pepper, your mouth wouldn't begin to water, your stomach rumble.
Nona's mouth had already filled with saliva. When it came to food, her strings were remarkably easy to pull.
Hessa worked with threads when she tried to stop Yisht stealing the ship heart.
She shot an angry glance at Joelle, then frowned at Zol, who still, years later, felt tainted by that association.
And I saw it because we were thread-bound.
Young Hessa was a remarkable talent. I've not seen another so gifted at such an age in all the years I've taught. She was a great loss.
Sister Pan settled her hand on Nona's shoulder.
And perhaps you will have an aptitude for thread-binding, novice. It's a rare skill and difficult to achieve, but always greatly aided by strong and honest friendship between both parties. It only ever works between Quantals, though. You need to share the same blood.
Sister Pan stepped back and addressed them all.
Two things you should always remember. Firstly, you can never pull the same thread twice. Every action you take changes the thing you act upon and changes its connections to the world. Secondly, you can never pull just a single thread. Every thread is bound to every other, sometimes through many links, though always fewer than you might imagine. Pull one thread and others are pulled. The effect spreads like a ripple on a pond. You can play at thread work and think that you are alone, but if you pull on a strand of a web hard enough and often enough, a spider will come. It is the same with the threads that bind the universe. Sooner or later you will be noticed. The spiders will, like as not, be humans, older, more powerful Quantal thread workers, Marjal sorcerers with particular talents, intuitives such as Abbas Glass. But there are bigger spiders out there too. This world is not ours. It is older than us. The missing were gone before our ships beached here. When the corridor was 1,000 miles wide and there was no moon in the sky, they were gone. Echoes of them live among the threads, vibrations that will not fade. And there are others, their servants, and things more ancient still. So, tread softly. Work sparingly, and hope.
She waved her stump at the walls.
In here, however, there is no need for hope. The sigils seal us from the world, and the few threads that penetrate even these walls are beyond your reach.
The morning's exercises began with Nona and Zol paired, each seeking to visualize the threads that bound the other to the world.
See the path first,
Sister Pan instructed.
Each of you must see it as it runs through the other. You know it from your dreams. You hunt it in the Serenity Trance. You follow it every moment of your life. And when the Ancestor grants you grace, you walk it.
Nona stared at Zol, at the black hair laid flat against her blunt skull. The stone-dark eyes, the broad cheekbones, the reddish hue of her skin as if the burn of the ice wind had never left it, and the short, hard line of her mouth. She tried to see through the ice-triber to the path, past her wide shoulders, past the height and strength of her. Time seemed both to race and to crawl in exercises like this. It always felt as if she had been at it an age, and when she stopped, Nona often discovered that the hours between one bell and the next had been devoured, and yet, with hindsight, her efforts felt like just the work of minutes. At first, the path showed as a single line, half-imagined, dividing Zol's imperfect symmetry. In the next instant, Nona saw it as Sister Pan had shown it, flexing at right angles to the world, a single, bright path. The only difference being that where Sister Pan's had been haloed by the diffuse white infinity of threads, straying from the path, each following its own convolutions before ending or returning to join the whole, Nona saw just the path and nothing else.
"I see her threads," Zol said.
"Good work, novice. Try to follow one back to where it left the path,"
Sister Pan called from across the room where she was working with Joelle on some more advanced matter.
"Keep at it, Nona. There is still a little while before it's time to return."
Nona felt the familiar sense of surprise. A nearly whole class spent and nothing to show for it. She gritted her teeth and stared harder. The path twisted across her vision, threadless. A bead of sweat rolled down her neck. The muscles of her jaw twitched and bunched. Her vision blurred. Nothing.
"Help me!"
Nona never called on Kyot, but she needed this.
"Helping is not in my nature."
Nona stared at Zol, willing her threads to appear. Abbess Glass had had Sister Pan try threadwork to hunt down Yisht and the Shipheart, of course, and without success. But Nona had been there, in Hesse's head, watched her as the Shipheart's power filled her and sharpened her talents into something keen enough to dissect reality. They had been thread-bound. There had been an unbreakable connection. Something of it could have survived. Must have survived. For more than 2 years, Nona had waited to be taught these arts. Years spent waiting for a chance to use them to avenge Hesse. And now? Nothing? She hadn't the skill.
"Well, novice,"
Sister Pan touched Nona's shoulder.
"Have you been successful?"
Nona tore her stare away from Zol, her eyes hot and dry, too wide open yet unwilling to close. She found herself sweat-soaked and aching in every limb.
"She doesn't have any."
Behind Sister Pan, Joelle's laughter tinkled like silver coins. Sister Pan shook her head.
"Of course she does. Every living thing, every dead thing, and everything that has never lived is bound by threads. Stone, bone, tree, and thee."
She pushed Nona aside and took her place.
"Allow me to."
She paused, frowned, and squinted, then blinked.
"That is quite remarkable. More remarkable to me than the fact that four bloods run in your veins, Zol."
Zol glowered at the old nun.
"She really doesn't have any threads?"
Nona asked, feeling vindicated.
"Of course she has threads,"
Sister Pan snapped.
"Were you not listening to me?"
She frowned again.
"But only the deepest and most fundamental. Those hardest to find, where there should be a myriad blazing around her. There are just a few, and very deep in the stuff of the world. I have never seen the like."
As if it had been holding its tongue and waiting for Sister Pan to pause, Bray tolled, the sound of the bell reaching them faintly through the stones.
"Come,"
Sister Pan waved to them to follow.
"I will consider this later."
And she began to walk the path that would take a nun through walls. Chapter 7.
"Hurry up!"
Jula beckoned at them from down the rock passage, a black shape behind her lantern.
Breathe out. I'll pull.
Nona grabbed Darla's wrist and heaved as the girl exhaled. Behind Darla, the outside world intruded as a line of brightness, glimpsed through the cliff face. Darla lurched forward, gasping for air, free of the crevice. Further down the passage, Ruli gave a brief round of sarcastic applause.
I still have that grease if we need it.
I'll give her grease, Darla growled, and followed as Nona hurried to catch the others.
The Seren Way was not as well travelled as the Vinery Stair, and the chances of discovery were small, but the longer it took Darla to squeeze through into the caverns, the greater that chance grew. Nobody had ever told the novices that they weren't to explore the caves and passages that riddled the plateau, but Nona always had the strong impression that this was because they hadn't asked, and also because all the entrances known to the nuns were barred and gated, the locks inscribed with sigils to defeat any form of picking. When Jula had first discovered the caves a year earlier, Nona had moved their weekly meeting underground, where the chances of detection shrank to zero. Nominally, the objective of the group was to recover the ship heart, but for Nona, it had always been about killing Yisht.
Hold up!
Nona and Darla closed the last few yards on the others. Jula and Ara carried the only two lanterns and the footing was treacherous.
If we break our ankles back here, it's you lot who'll have to carry us out. We'll just leave you here and say you ran away with city boys.
Ketty, the last of their number, grinned and made kiss mouths. The Hanska girl was just a few inches shorter than Darla now, though thin as a rail. She talked about city boys a lot, and it was a wonder to Nona that she preferred to spend her 7 day exploring the darkness beneath the Rock of Faith, rather than going into Verity to giggle at the opposite sex across Thabor Square.
Come on!
Ara led off, eager to reach new ground. At the first fork where a smaller passage led steeply down, Ketty took her block of chalk and reinforced the letter on the wall that indicated the path to take. The moisture tended to blur the marks. They moved on in single file, Darla at the rear, demonstrating her impressive range of oaths as she repeatedly grazed her head on the rock above. Nona called a halt at Round Cave 100 yards from the entrance. Darla had come up with the name, and whilst unimaginative, it was at least accurate.
Who's got something to report?
Nona looked to Ruli first. Ruli was on gossip duty, gathering any snippet of information that leaked into the convent through its connections with the outside world. Ruli had a talent for both creating and gathering gossip.
I do. I really do.
Jula stepped forward, half raising her hand before remembering that she wasn't in class.
I was reading the appendices in Levenin's older works. Everyone always quotes from the 7 histories of Marn, but...
What did you find?
Darla had even less patience for Jula's book lore than the others.
More about chip hearts in one page than I've discovered in all the books I've searched through since we started looking.
Jula grinned.
According to Levenin, there were 4 ship hearts within the Empire's boundaries. The one at Sweet Mercy, which is most closely tuned to Quantals. Another we knew about in the Neuguenth keeping at the Tetragode, which is attuned to Margils. One, he says, is rumoured in the city of True, and one from a gerent ship in the keeping of the mage Atoan.
Ara frowned.
I've never heard of a city called True, or a mage called Atoan. And if a ship heart were in a city, someone would own it, or it would get taken.
Jula nodded.
Levenin was writing 200 years ago. True is under the ice now, the black ice, and it was ruins before the ice took it. True's a city the missing left, and Atoan died years ago, but he had a son, Jaltoan, who was also a mage, and somehow is still alive.
Him, I've heard of, Darla said. He lives on the coast and helped General Hillen when the Dernish tried to land at Port Treen 2 years ago. My father was the general's second in command.
It's interesting and everything, Ruley said, but I don't see how it helps us. We're not going to walk up to the Tetragode and...
It helps us because we know where Shazal will have to look next, said Ara. And we are going to the ice.
Everyone went on the ice ranging in Mystic Class. Over the ice, though, not under it. Nona remembered her father's tales about hunting in the ice tunnels. The worst of them, the scariest stories, were from the time he ventured into the grey ice. The trip he never came back from was the one to the black.
The ice is a big place. And Tallow is never going to take us up to the black ice, even if it wasn't on the Skithroll side of the mountains.
Darla shivered.
Let's go explore some caves.
Nona looked around the circle of lantern-lit faces.
Any more contributions?
No?
Jula bit her lip.
Well, I thought it was interesting.
She shrugged and led off. It took less than half an hour's walk to reach the furthest limit of their explorations. But to expand their territory initially had taken the best part of a year, following dead ends or routes that grew too narrow or too dangerous. In several places they had fixed knotted ropes to aid in difficult climbs. It was Nona's private hope that they would find an alternative route into the convent undercaves, but there were no guarantees that the two systems connected.
I love it down here.
Jula fell in beside Nona as they trekked the gullet, a long water-smoothed passage wide enough to walk shoulder to shoulder.
So quiet, just the drip of water, and footsteps, and Darla swearing.
They passed a stand of stalagmites, blunt and glistening in the lantern light. Ketty said nothing. Even she had grown tired of her innuendo after the 10th or 12th time. A little further along, a veil of dripping water crossed the passage. Nona hunched and pressed on through the icy deluge. 5 tight, winding twists, rising steeply, took them past the niche where 2 skeletons lay, limed over with rock scale. 1 grown and 1 a child, locked together. A rusty stain between them may once have been a knife. They always made Nona sad, huddled there in the dark, watching with empty sockets as the centuries scurried by. After the rising turns came a scramble up a rock fall, with the cavern roof slanting just 3 feet above. Finally a cliff some 20 yards high, perhaps once a waterfall, the wet stone offering few handholds. Fortunately, the old watercourse had allowed room to swing and throw a grapple. The locating and pilfering of both rope and hook had taken a week, but the hours spent trying to catch some edge far above them had seemed much longer. On perhaps the 70th throw, Darla had snagged the hook, and Ruley, the lightest of them, had scrambled up. The rope was now secure and knotted at intervals. Climbing it brought them to the limits of their exploration, a roundish chamber, mud-floored, from which 3 new passages led. Nona stood with Ara, Jula, and Ruley catching their breath, staring at the exits, Ketty and Darla still climbing behind them.
I want to get under the convent, Nona said.
She blinked. She hadn't been intending to speak. But now the words had left her mouth, she realized it was better that the truth was out. For 3 years she had seen the only route to revenge on Yisht to be training, to make herself into a weapon suited to the task of finding, then destroying the woman. Neither would be easy. The empire was large, and Yisht expert at hiding, deadly when found. Nona had been very lucky in their first encounter, and had still only just survived. But Joelle's taunting had put into Nona's mind the idea that there might be some clue at the spot where Hesse died. Something the nuns had overlooked. Something her friend had left for her alone. It was a very faint hope.
too faint perhaps to justify exposing her companions to such dangers. But Joelle's words were an itch that refused to be scratched.
Hesse's name is so important to you, and yet you've never even visited the spot where she died.
The accusation repeated in her mind, an echo that grew rather than died away. I need to visit the Shipheart Vault. Nona spoke the words into the silence that had followed her first statement.
Because we won't be in enough trouble just for being in the tunnels, Ruli said. We should go where we're more likely to be caught, and we'll have broken more rules.
Jula frowned. Despite her cleverness, sarcasm always seemed to go over her head.
But I'm banned from leaving the convent until next 7 day in any case, Nona said. So if I'm right under it, I'll be breaking fewer rules. Go back to the vault?
Ara asked, raising her lantern to inspect Nona's face.
That's madness. Abbess Glass will throw us out. You know what she said about the undercaves.
I have to. Nona had to see it for herself. She had to set her hands to the spot where Hesse had died. Perhaps some clue remained that would help her find Yisht.
I have to. For Hesse. I felt her die. The rocks. Yisht's knife. I felt all of it. If there's justice to be had or revenge, it starts there, where it happened.
I don't want to go near the convent. The sinkhole's too close.
Ketty got to her feet behind them after finishing the climb.
There could be tunnel floods.
She shuddered.
I still say they'll have the undercaves blocked off.
Dala followed Ketty into the chamber, brushing grit from her habit.
Maybe, but it's as good a direction to explore as any others, Ara said.
Nona thanked her silently.
I don't know. Dala shook her head. The Abbess wasn't joking when she put the undercaves off limits. She wrote it in the book and everything.
That was over 2 years ago,
Ara came to Nona's defence.
Plus, if they didn't know Yisht was there for all those weeks, and she was going to and fro from her room, they won't know we're there if we come from underneath for a quick look. Right, Nona?
Nona nodded. She owed it to Hesse. She had let years slide by and done nothing to avenge her. Her friend had died, and Nona had hidden in the convent, well-fed, cared for, while Yisht walked the world with Hesse's blood on her hands. But though the corridor might be a narrow girdle to the globe, it was still too wide for a lone child to find a woman like that who didn't want to be found. And Yisht was an ice triber. She might be anywhere in the vastness of the ice.
I can't do this alone.
The gate to Shade Class had a sigil-scribed lock now. The thing would have to be blown off its hinges to gain access without the key. Coming at the dome of the ancestor in the Shipheart chamber from below was the best option.
I'll help,
Jula spoke up, her voice thin in the cavern's void. Nona offered her a smile. Jula put an arm around her shoulders for the briefest hug. So? Nona, even less at ease with physical affection than Jula, waved a hand at the tunnel mouths.
That one.
Jula pointed to the leftmost tunnel, boulder choked and leading down. She had an instinct for direction below ground that had proved uncanny.
Though it doesn't look very safe.
Ara led on, and they followed, stepping over fallen rock, some of it still jagged. After 100 yards or so, the passage broadened and became a cavern so wide it swallowed their light and gave nothing back. For a moment, Ara halted, and they all held quiet, listening to the silence and to the drip, drip, drip of water that was somehow part of the vastness of the silence. Nona glanced about at the novices around her, all illuminated on one side and dark on the other, and for an instant found herself outside her body, suddenly aware of herself as a tiny mote of life, warmth, and light in the black and endless convolutions of the cave system. Now more than ever she felt the irony that the Rock of Faith, named for the foundations of their religion, lay rotten with voids and secret ways, permeable and ever-changing.
"We should go across," Jula said,
her voice small in all that empty space. She didn't sound as if she wanted to. Ketty marked the wall with her chalk and drew an arrow on the floor.
"We should follow the wall. We're less likely to get lost," Darla said.
Ara took them to the left, staying close to the wall. Stalagmites rose in small, delicate forests. Stalactites descended in curtains where the cave curved down, glistening with an iridescent sheen like the carapace of a beetle.
"Stop!"
Ruli turned and stared into the darkness beyond the lantern's reach. Nona stopped. The others too.
"What?"
Jula raised her light.
"Didn't you hear it?"
"No."
Darla loomed beside her, her shadow swinging.
"Something's out there. Coming for us,"
Ruli said, wide-eyed.
"There's nothing living in these caves," Darla said. "We would have seen bones or dung. What did it sound like?"
"Try,"
Ruli shivered.
"Try?
I want to go back,"
Ruli said. Ara advanced a few yards, lantern high.
"Something here."
Nona crowded forward with the others, leaving Ruli in deepening shadow.
"What is it?"
Ketty frowned. To Nona's eye, it seemed that a shadowy forest of misshapen stalagmites covered the cavern floor, some curving over in ways that such growths are not supposed to.
"Bones,"
Jula saw at first. From one instant to the next, the scene switched from one of confusion to one of horror. Skeletons, calcified like those back in the niche, but more thickly, dozens of them.
"Some of these have been here for an age."
Ara pointed to a stony ribcage from which straw-thin stalactites dripped, and to a skull distorted by the weight of stalagmite growing upon it, like a candle from which half the wax had run. Jula bent over to inspect something by the wall.
"We really need to go,"
Ruli called at them, not having moved from where she stood.
"Can't you feel it?"
"I don't..."
But then Nona felt it, and held her tongue. Something scraping at the edges of her senses, a dry touch from which her mind recoiled.
"Hollister."
"What?"
Nona felt Keote moving beneath the skin of her back. Normally he was silent in the caves.
"You should run."
"You always tell me to fight."
"Now I'm telling you to run."
"We should go back. Now."
Nona turned to follow Ruli, who had already started to run back the way they came, into the blind darkness.
"What are you scared of?"
Darla called after them.
"There's nothing here," she laughed. "And neither of you have a lantern."
Nona stopped at the margins of the lighted area, infected by a disembodied fear.
"What's out there, Keote?"
"Something missing, Bread. Something hungry. Run!"
"We need to go. Trust me."
Nona's voice sounded thin in the emptiness of the cavern. Behind her, the sounds of Ruli stumbling panic. Ara frowned, then followed.
"I don't understand you, but I trust you."
Jula fell in behind her. Darla, with the light now retreating from her, snarled in frustration and hurried after them. The six novices picked up the pace, shadows swinging all around them. Nona could make out Ruli ahead, feeling her way. With each passing moment, it seemed that something gathered itself behind them, as if the space now echoing with their footfalls was drawing in its breath. Nona felt the horror of it crawl along her spine. The darkness held something awful, something ancient and waiting. The need to be gone made her heart pound and tightened her breathing into gasps.
"Oh, blood!"
Even Darla felt it now, her face white. Nona knew with cold certainty that beyond the margins of their illumination, the calcified bones stretched out yard upon yard, innumerable victims lying in meticulous order. How many centuries had they watched the darkness? And she knew that among them paced a horror. She felt it now, individual, condensing out of the night, taking form. Perhaps it wore a man's shape, perhaps even her own. And if it ever raised its face to her, she would drown in nightmare. By the time they reached the chamber where they had chosen between the three unexplored passages, all of them were running. Ruli was already on the rope. Jula didn't wait for her to get off. Ara stood with her back to the cliff, lantern high, staring at the tunnel mouth. Ketty and Darla crouched by the edge, urging the others down. It was all Nona could do not to push between them and make her own grab for the rope.
"Ancestor, hurry it up!"
the cry broke from her. Ruli and Jula reached the bottom together and went sprawling in a clatter of loose stones. Ketty began to climb. The darkness in the tunnel seemed to thicken, rejecting the light from Ara's lantern.
"It's coming!"
Darla was sliding over the edge, hands white on the rope, her feet just a yard above Ketty's head.
"We can't stay!"
It was all Nona could do not to scream. Fear filled her, trembling in every limb, fluttering the breath in her lungs.
"Ara, come on!"
They descended the rope on top of one another, lanterns hooked to belts, burning their palms as they slipped from knot to knot. A confusion of swinging lanterns, sharp rocks and snatching shadows followed, screaming, panting, glimpses of chalk symbols, running, scrambling, and finally a desperate squeeze, and they lay in the improbable brightness of day, sprawled on the Seren Way, gasping for breath. There in the light, with a cold wind blowing and the plains stretching out below them towards the distant smokes of Verity, their flight seemed suddenly foolish.
"Never going in there again, ever."
Darla rolled over onto her back, her habit torn and smeared with mud.
"What were we running from?"
Ketty asked.
"First time, when Serenity would have really helped us."
Ara sat up, shaking her head.
"And we ran."
Nona couldn't believe she hadn't reached for her Serenity. Some novices still took a while to sink into the trance, but many could summon the mindset in a few moments. The fear had got into her before she thought to wall it away.
"Ancestor, look at us!"
Jula stretched out her habit. Grey underskirt showed through a tear as long as her hand. Nona glanced down at herself. Smears of mud streaked her in horizontal lines where she had collided with walls on the mad dash out.
"Sister Wheel will kill us!"
Ruli examined herself in horror.
"Sister Mop, you mean?"
Ara said.
"Both of them will."
Ketty jumped to her feet.
"Let's get back." "You're worried about Wheel and Mop?"
Nona pointed at the dark slot hidden back along the cliffside.
"What about that? Just now?"
Jula frowned and brushed a grimy hand back over her hair.
"I'm not going in there again."
She looked down again at the rip.
"Oh, we're in so much trouble."
Darla followed Ketty, muttering to herself. Jula and Ruli set off up the track behind them.
"Ara?"
Nona stood amazed.
"What happened in there? Why are they just leaving?"
Ara looked puzzled. The smudge of dirt just below her right cheekbone only seemed to make her more beautiful. She narrowed her eyes as if trying to capture some memory, then shook her head.
"I don't think we should come back."
She glanced once towards the fissure, shuddered, and turned to go.
"What's that?"
Nona pointed to something gleaming among the rocks at Ara's feet.
"Oh."
Ara didn't look down.
"It's just a knife. Jula picked it up in the..."
She shrugged and turned to walk away.
"Stay!"
Nona caught Ara's hand in hers.
"That thing in there. That monster. Do you remember it? Yes?"
Their fingers laced. Ara's blue eyes met the darkness of Nona's, and for a moment there was a recognition of something. Each took a step towards the other.
"No,"
Ara shook her head.
"I'm sorry.
The fragile moment broke. She pulled free and hurried after the others. And Nona felt as if some chance that might never come again had escaped her. Nona stood watching the five of them wind their way up the track, zigzagging its way towards the plateau.
What just happened?
You shouldn't go back to the caves.
Don't you try and pretend something didn't just chase us out of there.
It did. A holothur, I told you.
So why are Ara and the others walking away?
They don't want to die.
I mean, why are they more concerned about having to wash their habits and stitch a few tears? There's something more to this. Don't lie to me, demon. I'll force you into my fingers and hold them to the flame again.
I'll chew your bones and make you spit blood.
But you know I'll win, so tell me.
The fear untied them.
Untied?
The threads that bound them to that place, to these caves. The fear untied them. It set those memories loose. By the time they reach the top, this will all have been a dream for them. The Holothur made them forget.
And me? Why do I still care?
I protected you.
I don't believe you. You're made of lies.
Nona bent to pick up the knife. I know this weapon. A straight blade, dark iron, just a faint tracery of rust. The pommel, an iron ball. A narrow strip of leather wound around the hilt. A throwing knife. She had found one of the same design in her bed once, and seen another jutting from Sister Kettle's side. Keot reached above the collar of her habit, a hot flush rising.
I know it too.
You liar, how would you?
The woman who held it came to see a dead man.
Why?
To understand the person who killed him so that she might in turn kill them.
Nona asked the question, though she knew the answer.
Who did she come to see?
Raymel Taxis. He was dead, but the mages wouldn't let him die, and I was the first to find my way beneath his skin.
And the woman?
Was an Oiguin, tasked to kill you.
Chapter 8. In the week that followed, Nona tried each day to broach the subject, but none of her friends would do much more than admit, under pressure, that there might be caves beneath the rock. It reached the point at which Nona saw Jula pretend not to notice her, and turn a corner in order to avoid the chance of further questioning. She decided to drop the matter for a few days, and see if the Holothor's mark would wear off and return her companions to her. Mystic class lessons continued to challenge. Nona improved with the sword, practicing a handful of basic cut-and-thrust combinations, until they started to feel natural. In spirit, Sister Wheels set them the task of writing an essay about a saint of their choice. Nona took herself to the convent library, the smaller one attached to the scriptorium, rather than the larger store of holy texts held within the dome of the ancestor, to research. By the week's end, she had found three possible candidates from antiquity, all of whom had something in their story that would offend Mistress Spirit. Sister Pan continued to immerse Nona, Zol, and Joelle in threadwork, showing them new tricks. Sometimes she would demonstrate thread effects most easily achieved whilst in the Serenity Trance. At other times, fine work requiring the Clarity Trance. Changing a person's mood was something that might be achieved in a Serenity Trance. Changing a particular decision required clarity. Neither were quick or easy to achieve, and Sister Pan warned that some people were much harder to manipulate than others. Nona applied these lessons to the problem of the mark the Holothur had set upon her friends. She could see the damage in the halo of threads around each girl, but the solution lay beyond her skill. In the Serenity Trance she could see connections that must be undone or loosened. And in the Clarity Trance, she could see entanglements on the smallest scale that would need to be unravelled. But working on either problem would make the other worse. They needed to be worked on together.
which required two people. And the only thread worker she trusted to help, Ara, whose skills were pretty basic, was also one of those who needed fixing. Sister Pan might be able to solve the problem, but she clearly didn't bother herself with threadwork on novices, or she would have noticed Zol's peculiar lack long ago. Nona could draw Sister Pan's attention to the area of damage, but the old woman would ask questions, and as she said,
"Everything's connected."
Give Sister Pan one corner, and she would soon pull out the whole story, and that would be the end of their adventuring. Shade Lessons focused on disguise. A whole week passed without mention of poisons, save to note some that were useful in small doses for altering the hue of a person's skin or the color of their eyes. Sister Apple likened the business of disguise to an extended lie told with the body, with the tone of one's voice, and with the clothes that wrapped you. In mystic class, every novice took the first of the Grey Trials, which involved crossing Thabor Square undetected by other class members. Good disguise skills were a must. In academia, Sister Rail made a spirited attempt to bore the class to death with mathematics. Nona felt she had achieved under Sister Rule, at great personal cost, a tenuous grip on arithmetic. A triumph, considering there were few people in her village who could count past 12 with confidence. Sister Rail introduced her to algebra, and not gently. The only moment of interest came when Darla, despairing of letters that were numbers but not any particular number, demanded to know what use such things were.
"Our forebears used algebra to build the moon, novice."
Sister Rail drew herself to her full height, which wasn't much more than Darla's when seated.
"The curve of its mirror is governed by equations like these."
A gesture to the chalk scrawls behind her.
"It's how they tightened the focus as the world grew colder. Other equations allow it to be steered as it was in the past, tilted to deal with the uneven advance of the ice."
Nona frowned. Jula had mentioned something about changing the focus of the moon. Something she had read about the Ark years ago. Whoever owned the Ark could speak to the moon.
"It could be a weapon."
"What's that, Nona? Your expertise extends past assaulting classmates and reaches the moon now?"
Sister Rail tilted her head in inquiry. Tittered laughter around Joelle.
"It could be a weapon. If the focus was narrowed further, it could burn cities."
"Nonsense. The moon is not a weapon of war. There's no reason to believe the focus can be narrowed to that degree, even if someone wanted to do it."
Sister Rail waved the suggestion away with a bony hand. "If it can be tilted, it could be steered from the corridor entirely, then returned," Nona said, staring at the glistening white of the globe on Rail's desk.
"Whole nations could be denied the focus, and the ice would swallow them. It could melt vast lakes on the ice, then connect them to the corridor, washing away armies and cities."
"We were discussing the formula for a circle."
Sister Rail banged a heel to the floorboards, and the lesson sank back into a confusion of letters and symbols. Nona had let the nun's words slide past her and sat gazing at the distorted sky offered through puddle-glass windows. Memory filled her vision. Yisht stumbling away chased by shadow, the shipheart in her hand. 4 shipharts to open the ark. 1 ark to control the moon. 1 moon to own the world? By the 7th day, nothing had changed in the others' reaction to talk of returning to the caves. Not ready to explore alone, Nona agreed to accompany Ara on a visit to Terramensis, a distant cousin of hers.
"It'll be great to get you off the rock for once," Ara grinned, hugging her range coat around her. "I don't think the Abbess plans to let me out on my own, even when I've got the red."
Nona peered around the pillar, squinting against the ice wind. The Mensis escort was late. They were sending a dozen of their house guard, enough to satisfy Abbess Glass that neither Ara nor Nona would be at risk from kidnap or assassination.
There is no point to strength if it is never tested.
Zol stood in the open before the pillar.